You're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're joining from. And thank you for listening to this episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. I'm your producer and director here at the Yeager Studios, Rob Medford, and together we are bringing you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you're new to the show, I'd like to be the first to thank you for checking us out. We're excited to have you as part of our listenership. If you're here because you've already heard our show and you're a continued listener, we thank you for the ongoing support. It's always greatly appreciated. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more about what Yeager CPA Review has to offer, check out our website at YeagerCPAReview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you might have. The link and telephone number will be in the description of this episode. Here at Team Yeager, we're excited to tell you about our new Yeager CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Yeager CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new, month-to-month, no long-term commitment subscription format. But without any further delay, I'm going to pass the microphone on over to your host, Billy Yeager.
Well, let me just say, and thanks for the introduction, Rob, of not mentioning my name, but...
I mentioned your name.
Oh, did you? Okay. Anyway, today is a little different CPA review and more. We have no guest. We have a guest. I'm sorry. Ron, you are a guest. Anyway,
thank you, Phil.
CPA review and more, we're actually talking about the updates to the CPA exam for the period beginning July 1st of 2017. And I'm happy to have with us one of our instructors, Ron Primeroso, who is now in, can I mention where you are, Ron?
I'm in Missoula, Montana.
Montana, yes, yes. And I told you the story, Ron, very quickly, that I met this couple on a cruise from Missoula, Montana.
Yes.
And I said, where the heck is that? But, you know, you are the second person I met from Missoula, Montana, okay? And by the way, Ron is a nice guy. He lived for 15 years of his life in New York. So he's okay with me. All right. The Missoula, Montana. It's beautiful. I'm sure it's a beautiful area. All right. Anyway, we're going to start off with these updates and we're going to start off with, actually, Ron is doing most of this. I'm just going to do the regulation, but Ron will do the financial accounting. And Ron, I'm just going to let you start off. By the way, you want to give your background a little so they know who you are, and I know who you are, but all right, tell us your background very quickly.
Hi, everyone. So I'm Ron Primeroso. I'm happy to be an instructor here at Yeager CPA Review. And my background is I have several degrees in accounting from Florida State and Florida Atlantic University in South Florida. I have a PhD in accounting and I teach accounting at a variety of universities. I also have a background in audit with KPMG for 6 years. And I worked in private industry for a New York Stock Exchange company named Sensormatic, which is now owned by Johnson Controls, and worked and lived overseas in Europe and in Asia for 15 years. So, but I'm doing now what I love the most, which is teaching. And one of the reasons I love working for Yeager CPA Review is to help candidates like yourself to pass this exam, because I remember very well how hard I had to study to pass this exam back in those days when Phil and I had to take this monster. So, we hope this cast for you will be an informative update of the changes happening to the exam, as Phil just described, starting July 1. And what I will do is kick this off by starting a description of the changes in the FARS portion of the exam. And I have good news there, because actually there's no changes at all to the blueprint for the quarter starting July 1 until the end of September. Absolutely no changes to blueprint. Contrary, you'll see to some of the other sections. But it's important to remind you that starting in Q1 of this year, the exam started testing heavily the accounting for leases, right? The update that was made to accounting for leases by the ASUs. And since the first quarter, there have also been some targeted updates to the accounting for leases, because There's still a lot of discussions going on regarding the implementation of the detailed requirements of lease accounting under U.S. GAAP. So one of those targeted improvements was started to be tested in the second quarter. And now in the third quarter, there is ASU 2018-20, which the FASB refers to as narrow scope improvements to lease accounting. And the change there is, per this ASU, the lessor can elect to treat sales taxes as a lessee cost, whether or not they are collected on behalf of the third party and remitted by the lessor acting as an agent. So that's the big targeted improvement, a narrow scope improvement made for the accounting for leases related to sales taxes and the recording of the original leases on the lessor's books, which is happening in the third quarter. Potentially, this could be a mobile choice question, right? Under in the FAR section of the exam, who knows? But since the FASB has mentioned it and now it's eligible for testing, we really suggest that you review this ASU. And you can also see this in our Jaeger materials, where we have a description of this in significant.
Yeah, and Ron, if I can mention, in the leases now, the lessee can classify it as a finance lease if the lessee meets certain requirements. And then if the lessee actually categorizes it as a finance lease, the lessor will show it as a sales type lease.
All right. Okay. And the second update, or very, very small change that the AICPA has mentioned that could be tested and is eligible for testing is if you read in our book about hedge accounting, right? That was another big topic, which was implemented this year in financial reports, public company financial reports, the nation, is benchmark interest rates that are used for hedge accounting in assessing interest rate risk. So what the FASB did in another ASU, which was issued and is now effective, is they added a fourth benchmark interest rate for hedge accounting called the overnight index swap rate, which is based on secured overnight financing, okay, as a benchmark rate for determining interest rate risk in hedge accounting type rules, okay? So without getting into that further, you'll see there's now a fourth benchmark interest rate that's been added as a criteria. And again, you can see this described in our FARS book under hedge accounting and derivative risk and interest rate. So that's really the good news in FARS, really only two more items, right? Update on lease accounting, and also the adding of another benchmark interest rate, which is eligible for companies to use in assessing interest rate risk. So I will now turn this over. I think it's your turn, right, Phil?
Let's talk about the changes to regulation for the period beginning July 1st. And the reg section of the exam includes multiple choice questions, as you know, task-based simulations, and also some research prompts. Now, when it comes to dates, a lot of the items that went into effect under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, all right, some of them had timing differences. For example, all right, the alimony deduction, which is no longer deductible, which means any alimony received by the recipient is no longer taxable. But that did not go into effect for January 2nd, 2018, all right? Most of the changes went into effect for the tax year beginning January 2nd, 2018. Alimony stayed the same, which meant if you had a divorce decree executed in 2018, then the recipient would pick up income and the payer could credit. You don't have any debits and credits in taxes. All right. The payer could actually deduct alimony as a deduction to arrive at adjusted gross income. However, if you have a divorce decree that's now executed in 2019, what happens now is alimony is no longer taxable to the recipient, but then on the other side, the person paying it, all right, cannot deduct it to arrive at AGI, all right? That's the difference. So what they're going to do now is this. So that you know exactly what year they're talking about, they're no longer going to put on the exam, all right, Joe Smith on 21X something, all right? They're not going to put that. They're going to use specific years. So if it's a transaction that involves 2018, they'll say 2018. They're going to put the actual dates now, all right? If it says 2019, they'll say 2019. Now, please remember, They are testing on the exam as of now, all right, for the 2018 rules, because we're still preparing returns in 2019 for 2018, because there are returns that are still on extension till I think October 15th. So, you know, the individual returns. So please remember, don't worry about that. They'll tell you the years. So you just have to know the rules of what went into effect in 2018 for the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, all right? And there are a few provisions that actually did not take effect until 2019. Another representative task statement says this, all right? You have to now calculate the direct and indirect ownership percentages of corporation stock or partnership interest to determine whether or not they are related parties for federal income tax purposes. Now, please remember this. If you have a brother, sister, husband, wife, all right, let's assume the husband owns 50% of the stock of a corporation and the wife owns 50%. Now, the husband alone does not have, all right, he doesn't have control of that corporation because control is owning more than 50%. However, if you have related parties together, all right, you can say this. If the husband owns 50% and the wife owns 50%, the husband owns directly 50% and indirectly to his wife, through his wife, 50%. So the husband does own now 100% directly and indirectly, all right? And that would be a related party transaction. Now, when it comes to partnerships, if you have a brother, sister, husband, wife, whatever, if the husband owns a 50% interest in a partnership and the wife owns a 50% interest in a partnership, if the husband sells anything to the partnership, the husband is considered to own directly 50% his interest, all right, and indirectly the wife's interest. So therefore, the husband owns directly 50%, indirectly 50%. You add them together, that's 100%. So directly and indirectly, the husband has control of that partnership, all right? So that, you know, that's been, actually it's been on before. It really is not, this is not new, but they're being a little more specific what they want. Also, all right, there's a revised understanding and remembering of also this, all right? You have to recall, you have to know the assets that are includable in the decedent's gross estate for federal estate tax purposes. Now, this is under Form 706, which is the final estate tax return, which shows all the assets owned by the decedent and minus any allowable deductions, such as funeral costs, administrative. But this is now saying, recall assets includable in the decedent's gross estate. Now, this also includes the assets the decedent owned at the time of death, and also it includes any assets that were owned jointly that the decedent had with another party, jointly held property. You have to know how to allocate that to the person's estate who died first. Then the second one is they want you to recall allowable estate tax deductions for federal estate tax purposes. Well, on the Form 706, the final estate tax return, you are allowed to deduct various deductions. And they are funeral expenses. You can deduct administrative expenses. You can actually deduct debts of the decedent. Anything that's unpaid by the decedent at the time of death, that's deductible from the gross estate. Also, all right, you can deduct any charitable contributions that the decedent actually left to a charity, and that's an unlimited deduction. And also, any money that went to the spouse, all right, is an unlimited marital deduction from the gross estate. And then one more thing, all right, if the decedent at the time of death actually had any type of casualty loss, all right, the casualty loss of that decedent at the time of death, all right, can be deducted on the Form 706 as a deduction from the gross estate, all right? So those are some of those. And I believe I actually do discuss that even before they mention this, but the fact is that they're mentioning it right now again. That means they're going to test it, all right? Please keep that in mind. Now, could they test, I think they said, revise the remembering and understanding representative task. So they could ask it as, I think, multiple choice, if it says understanding, or, all right, if it deals with evaluation, whatever, that's the task-based simulations, they could ask this on a task-based simulation. But please remember, when you do all the problems, multiple choice, task-based simulations, the exam is completely machine graded. So not, they're not going to ask you to start and come up with a complete estate tax return, all right? they'll ask you for information that's included in that gross estate return, all right? Estate tax return, Form 706, such as what is income, all right? And they may give you a bunch of items, and you have to determine which of these items are income. And then they'll give you a whole bunch of deductions, all right? And you're going to have to fill in which items are deductible. So they're not going to ask you, one, to create the problem from the beginning, scratch, because it's a machine-graded exam. And all the machine-graded does is this. The computer scans the answers, all right? That's how they can get it back to you in such a short period of time now. It's all machine-graded. So anyway, that is the changes for regulation, if you want to call it changes. Actually, I've been teaching the gross income items in the Form 706, and also I've discussed the deductions on the final estate tax return Form 706. I think that's already in the book, but all right, they're just trying to clarify, if anything, what they want you to know on that. So anyway, I will now give that back to Ron, and Ron's going to cover now, is it BEC, Ron?
Auditing.
Auditing. All right.
Auditing, yeah.
Right. Ron, now, auditing had a lot of changes, did it not, Ron?
Hey, everyone. Really hope you're enjoying this episode of CPA Review and More. And let's face it, if you're anything like us, you probably listen to your fair share of podcasts. And that's exactly why here at Yeager CPA Review, we've teamed up with Podcoin to bring you a great way of getting paid just for listening to the podcasts you already enjoy. So I know it sounds a little crazy, and I assure you, it's not. Here's how it works. You listen to podcasts such as CPA Review and More, and then you earn Podcoin while you listen. You can turn that Podcoin into gift cards at places like Amazon, Starbucks, or Dunkin' Donuts. Or if you're anything like us here at Team Yeager, you can donate to a charity right through the Podcoin app. The more you listen, the more you earn. So what are you waiting for? Go to your app store and your iPhone or Android and download the Podcoin app now. Use promo code Yeager when you sign up, and we'll even give you 300 Podcoin as a thank you just for signing up. In return, Podcoin will give us a little bit of information about the listeners of our podcast who use the Podcoin app, how long they're listening, and which episodes are the most popular. That's it. Check out Podcoin today.
So anyway, I will now give that back to Ron, and Ron's going to cover now. Is it BEC, Ron?
Auditing.
All right.
Auditing, yeah.
Right. Ron, now, auditing had a lot of changes, did it not, Ron?
Mainly related, Phil, to data analytics. Audit data analytics.
All right. That's the major... what do you mean by data analytics? Do you know?
So good question.
I'm sure you know. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
good question. So what the exam is testing is, do you understand how data analytics can be used by an auditor performing an audit, you know, in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards? How can the auditor use that, for example, to assess risk, right? Risk that the financial statements are misstated, okay? So the exam, as we all know, more and more data analytics are being used in business by businesses, right, to analyze their business operations. And I'm going to talk about this also once I get to BEC, because this is another topic that's been expanded in BEC testing. But for the audit, it's also important for the auditor, right, who has access to the accounting information system, right, of their clients, to download lots of data and information and use that data and information in performing, right, their initial assessment of the risks that the financial statements are misstated, or the risks that certain accounts on the balance sheet or the income statement contain misstatements, okay? So, for auditing, again, a reminder, there are 72 multiple choice questions on auditing and 8 task-based simulations. Each of those are graded 50% of your grade on the auditing part. And these revisions, effective July 1, strictly add details to the blueprint on how audit data analytics will be tested on the exam. The good news is there's no changes in the nature, scope, or the content of data analytics as they were in the blueprint before that are being tested on the exam. I have to say I'm very proud that if you go to page 3C-15 of the Yeager Auditing and Attestation book, you will see some excellent examples we can provide you of what is meant by audit data analytics, especially outputs for audit data analytics, and also what the exam is talking more and more about is called visualization. Boy, Phil, that's so hard for me to say, okay, with my New York accent.
What is visualizations? What is that, Ron?
So I'm going to give you some great examples in a minute, but let me skip to those. For example, you're on an audit and you're auditing a bank, okay? And you're able to download from the accounting information system of that bank information regarding new customers of the bank that you're granting loans to, okay? Well, for example, you'll be able to visualize that at the end of a quarter or the end of a month or at the end of a period, right, which relates to compensation of people being paid in the bank, you may want as an auditor to say, how many loans are we granting to customers with a credit rating below such and such, right? Which is a high risk credit rating, right? So if the auditor is able to visualize that, download that data, put it into a graph that shows obviously at the end of every month, the bank seems to be slipping on granting credit, not in accordance with their credit policy, to certain customers with low credit ratings, that would indicate to the auditor that potentially what, Phil? They might have more risk, right, in the loan portfolio. Well, that's a visualization technique, right? You can see it in a graph. It's obvious that the client is circumventing or not adhering to their internal controls on loan granting to new customers at the end of a period because of the pressure to make earnings, for example, okay? So I think that's a good example, right?
Yeah, it's very good, very good.
I mean, it's so many examples that an auditor can download. And I have another one on, for example, invoice sales. Okay, of course, companies are under pressure to achieve revenue and profit goals, right? So the auditor can download all of the invoices for a period of time, and they could tell visually that 90 or 80% or 70% of the sales are invoiced on the last day or two, for example, right, of a month, of a quarter, of a year. That would indicate that the auditor, that they need to take a very careful look as they look at their compliance and also subsequently their substantive testing of sales recorded at the end of a month, quarter, or year, right? Again, because of the pressure to meet earnings. And this can be seen in a graph, Phil, rather than just numbers, right? Numbers are one thing. A graph can be very revealing. So those are two good examples. What I love about our book is if you turn to page 3C15, you can see lots of great examples of visualization techniques. For most of you candidates, you probably have seen these since you've been in grade school, right? Pie charts, line charts, bar graphs, histograms, tree maps, bubble charts, right? These are all examples of visualization techniques which the auditor can use in gathering audit data, okay? And what the auditor, what the exam is saying is, it's really up to the auditor to review these outputs and determine the impact of the information contained in these outputs in designing their both compliance testing and also later their substantive, okay? The good news is the updates and auditing are not going to require you as candidates to work with data sets and create your own data analytics. We're not at that point yet, okay? The ICPA is looking at that. They're evaluating it, but for now, you don't have to worry that they're going to throw a data set at you and ask you to create a pie chart or any type of a chart related to audit data analytics. The key I want to emphasize to you candidates is the importance of using audit data analytics to assess audit risk. I cannot emphasize that enough, okay? The AICPA wants you to understand the importance of using audit data analytics to assess audit risk. And the ICPA is also emphasizing the importance of using data analytics as part of analytical procedures, right? We all know the importance of analytical procedures, right? In performing an audit, trends in inventory, trends in receivables, trends in items on the balance sheet that are subject to risk assessment, okay? So what the ICPA is going to test you on is you understand the cause and effect of audit data analytics and information you can obtain in assessing risk on, for example, balance sheet items like inventory and accounts receivable. And also, you know, the importance of the auditor extracting data from the EIS, I mentioned this already, putting them into data visualization tools such as Microsoft Power and Excel, right, and producing graphs. But again, you don't have to do that yet on the exam. But I think it's possible you could see on the exam examples of graphs, and they will ask you for cause and effect. So here's a graph showing credit risk for a bank. It obviously shows a deterioration in granting loans to customers with lower credit rating. What should that do in your audit planning process, right? How will that evaluate? How will that impact your evaluation of the loan loss reserve for that bank if the bank is granting a credit to lower to more risk customers?
Hey, Ron, you know, people call me when they get their results in auditing. And I always say, well, let's go over your diagnostic report. Yeah. And a lot of times when they fail, one of the areas that they're weaker in is risks. They have trouble with that risk area.
Yep.
So that is definitely a very important area.
Yes.
And, you know, yes. AICPA obviously thinks it's very important.
And Phil, as we all know, in the planning of an audit, it's almost the first step, right? Is assessing risk of the audit client, okay? So if it's a new audit, of course, you're going to might be from scratch. If it's from prior audits, you have work papers from the past to evaluate. But of course, every business changes over time. But you're right, Phil. I mean, the AICPA is all over this topic of risk, how to assess risk. And certainly audit data analytics, Phil, and visualization techniques are where the profession is going and also where the AICPA is going on testing on the audit part of the exam, no doubt. So, and for me, I understand that perfectly because it's easier to visualize things, right, than it is to look at a bunch of numbers, okay? In the old days, we used to look at numbers only, but now with the fantastic graphing capabilities of software available, it's, you know, it's very easy to. Okay, so audit data analytics and also visualization. Also, they've updated the blueprint on a few of the tasks. I just want to mention them. They've actually expanded identifying and documenting an entity's key IT general and administrative controls, and to expand that to say, make sure that you have evaluated the policies and the procedures on IT controls, especially overall security and reliability, and how they impact, Phil, the financial statement audit evaluation and also the internal control audit evaluation. So, of course, IT today, right, is an important component of any business. There's an expectation for candidates taking the exam that they understand the impact of IT general administrative controls, right, on risk assessment, which includes impacting the financial statements and internal control evaluations required, right, under Peekaboo. The other update they have done is with regards to compliance testing and also substantive testing on IT controls, general and administrative controls, that the auditor considers the impact of those testings, both in the control stage and also in the substantive testing stage. What are the impacts of the auditor's findings, right, on controls and substantive testing on the reliability of the data and therefore the impact on the financial statement and internal controls? So all they've done here is kind of expanded the definitions a little bit and asked you candidates to make sure cause and effect, right? You assess IT controls, general controls, you assess IT administrative controls, for example, you find that they're weak, you need to determine what that impact could be on the financial statements and also your evaluation of internal controls. You may have to do more substantive auditing testing if you find that IT general controls and also administrative controls are weak. And this is no surprise, right, for you candidates. If you've been reading the newspapers the last couple of years, right, there's been some tremendous security problems and also data compromise problems at companies like Target and Equifax, right? These have been heavily in the news. The AICPA reads the newspaper, just like we all do, right? And, you know, companies are very hyperactive these days about making sure that their controls in the IT area are protecting privacy, confidentiality, et cetera. And by the way, I'm going to expand on all this when I get to the BEC updates here in a few minutes, because there, the AICPA has really put a lot more definition and information, very basic, good news, into what the requirements are that you need to know for the exam.
Ron, what happens if someone has been out of school a while and obviously they did not get any IT courses?
Yes.
Do you say to them, hey, don't take the exam? Or what's your position on that?
Very good question, Phil. I love our Section 4 of the auditing and attestation book that Jaeger has produced. If you know nothing or very little, or your memory's a little soft on IT basics, okay? If you go, sorry, on BEC, you should start right away on section 4 of BEC, where we have a fabulous section on IT basics. And Phil, there's no reason to be scared of IT because the exam tests the basics, okay? You don't have to worry about getting questions that you would might expect as an IT VP or IT security person. That's not what the exam is testing. It is really testing the basic business fundamentals of IT. We all work with computers and or laptops or whatever we have, handhelds, and right, we all practice basic security, right, Phil? We put in firewalls, if we put stuff in the cloud, we have passwords. The exam is fully focused on the basics, okay? So don't be scared, Phil, in answer to your question. If you feel your background on this is a little bit dated or you're not really up to date, again, the exam is going to test the basics. And I'm going to talk about that a lot more once I get to B's.
Thank you.
Okay, so that really, Phil, is the update on auditing, okay?
Well, I guess it's time to go to BEC updates, correct?
Yes. So let's go to BEC, which is really, at the beginning here, you'll hear me, a continuation of the first part of what I just talked about on auditing, which is, well, let me summarize. First of all, what they've done really is only clarified some of the sections of the blueprint, okay? So they haven't added new stuff, but they've really clarified and made much more precise what information they're looking for the candidate to know. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. They've also reorganized area 4 of the blueprint, which is information technology in general. And again, I want to refer you to section 4 of our BEC book, which I just mentioned a minute ago, is our addressing the key concepts you need to know for IT in taking the BEC part of the exam. And again, for those of you a little weak there, or you feel you're not as confident as you want to be, forget what Phil said. It's not an alternative not to take the exam, okay? I think you can read this section, get what you need, think about it, study it, practice our questions and simulation, and you should be fully prepared to take this portion of the exam. The good news on BEC, there's no new question types are going to be included on the exams. The format of the exam will be the same as it is today. And these changes made to the blueprint are all tested at the remembering and understanding level.
Which means multiple choice, right?
Which means multiple choice questions. So that should make you candidates feel very confident that if you focus and study correctly, that you should be able to answer these multiple choice questions. And by the way, we also have a lot of practice multiple choice questions in our book addressing these items. So the emphasis of these changes is the use by management of internal data analytics. So remember, right, I talked about audit data analytics for the auditing part of the exam. For the BEC part of the exam, you could imagine that management, right, is also using data analytics and data visualization techniques, right, to manage their business, okay, on a daily basis. That's so common, okay? I give you an example. At Target in Missoula, Montana, where I live, I bet you the manager knows what time of the day is the most foot traffic, the most sales of certain items in the store. These type of things, right, are all internal data analytic techniques, okay? So remember now, the BEC part of the exam is testing business and environmental concepts, okay? There is some accounting in here, but not a lot, okay? It's more business management, business environment, and related concepts. So let me address the reorganization and the revision focus made to BEC. So the emphasis, and I say it again, is on IT basic. You must make sure you go into the exam prepared with a basic understanding of IT organization, right? What the IT organization structure of your client is or of your business that you're working for, and also the IT governance structure of the business. So for example, an IT organization, right? Is the IT organized all internally or is it outsourced? If it's outsourced, what about the outsourced provider, right? Who is it? Are they a reputable company? What is their reputation on protecting their clients' security and privacy and interests, et cetera, et cetera? And I'm not going to get back into auditing on the audit of service control functions and things like that, but certainly that will be, you know, part of that. So corporate governance, right, is what are the internal controls that the company has, right, over the IT function? That's part of the business environment. You should be able to understand the importance of corporate governance, okay? Are there people on the board of directors that have IT and corporate governance type experience? That's an important part of the oversight. And that includes, of course, the CEO and the CFO, right? Do these people have these type of experience? And how has the company related regulatory frameworks, right? Like SOX and also like COSO, right? And also like COBIT. Some of these should sound familiar too, right? So this is Group A, Topic 1. This has sort of been reorganized under BEC. Group A, Topic 2 is they're testing you on your understanding of IT systems and processes. Do you understand the role of IT inside of a company for their basic business process? And we know what basic business processes are, right? Bill revenues, right? Expenses, payroll, production, right? These are all basic processes. There's an expectation that you understand the role of IT in those processes, okay? How are these important processes, which then, of course, feed the financial statements, organized? Group A, Topic 3, do you understand the company's use of IT data? And here comes data analytics again, right? How does a company or how should a company use data analytics and visualization in making business decisions, okay? I use the target example of customers, right? They may have something at the front of the store which counts all the customers coming in. They get information from the cash registers on when sales are made throughout the day, which day of the week, what time of the day, et cetera, okay? So there's an expectation that you as a candidate understand how a company can use IT data to better manage their business. So this is Group A, Topic 3. Now I move to Group B, Topic 1, IT risk and risk assessment. If you remember, right, Phil asked me about audit risk, right, before under auditing. Well, here in BEC, for the internal management of a business, do you understand what the IT risks are of the company internally, and how has the company assessed internally its IT risks? What mitigation strategies has the company, right, put into place to minimize IT risks? And what are the costs of those different strategies? What kind of insurance do they have against IT risk, okay? How often do they assess those risks? I think one of the things I see a lot these days is a lot of companies hire people from the outside to test their IT risk, okay? To make sure that those strategies that are in place are effective. And this is an important subject, right? Because IT is changing rapidly today. The risks are changing rapidly. The red flags are changing rapidly. All of the things that are bad that can happen in IT today are changing rapidly. So it's important that the company continuously assesses its IT risks. Group B, Topic 2 is what are the IT risks related to system development and system maintenance? Well, as you can imagine, right, most companies are not standing still on their IT systems, right? They're expanding them, they're outsourcing them, they're maintaining them, right? They have relationships with vendors on maintenance. So there's an expectation when you take the exam as a candidate that you understand what those issues are, what are the risks, and what are the costs, right, of system development and maintenance. Group B, Topic 3, IT risk processing integrity. If you remember, right, from your AIS course or your auditing course, that means what? Input, processing, output, and storage. What are the company's controls in input, output, processing, and storage, okay? And what are the risks that are associated with each one of those areas in processing integrity? Group B, Topic 4, IT risks, security, privacy, confidentiality, and availability. And here, the exam's looking to you as a candidate to understand the importance of segregation of duty. Sound familiar, right? Tested on auditing, and then of course, tested on BEC. And what are the system access risks that a company has, right? That somebody from the outside could access the system, right? Unauthorized, to obtain company data and information, customers' social security numbers, customer bank account information, these type of things, okay? So those IT risks are also important. Finally, Group C, they've redefined that the controls that are that a company should have responding to IT risks consist of application controls, right? Sound familiar from auditing? General IT controls, sound familiar from auditing? So the good news, right, is on BEC and auditing, there is some cross information, right? That's very similar between these two parts of the exam. So when you're studying for one, you're also reinforcing your knowledge in studying for the other. Topic three, logical and physical controls. And topic four, what type of continuity and recovery plan does a company have if they get in serious trouble, okay? That's an important part of Group C and in assessing IT risk. So Phil, that was a quick summary of really just a reorganization of the BEC part of the exam related to information technology only, okay? And as you can see, Phil, the exam more and more is focusing on candidates' knowledge related to IT, IT risk, IT applications, and a crossover to auditing is there, like I said before. And I'm so proud, I read again last night our section four on BEC on information technology. It is a beautiful, gorgeous section of our book for those of you that need to refresh your knowledge, information. So, and we have incorporated, by the way, all of these changes and additional guidelines in this revision into our book already. So I strongly recommend our candidates to review that section. Over to you, Phil.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. Good job. Great job. I don't know if you've gotten the message yet that they test on the blueprints, okay?
Yes.
The reason I mention that, as I've said many, many times, you need to take a course that not gives you the blueprints, they hand you a copy of the blueprints, but you have to have a course that integrates the blueprints in their books and then explains what each blueprint is, all right? And we really, and I'll say this, I think we're the only course that does that at this point, all right? Now, don't be fooled by companies that say, hey, we use the blueprints. Well, that can mean a few things. One, they give you a copy of the blueprints. You can get a copy of the blueprints by going to the AICPA.org website, but that's not going to help you because it doesn't explain the information under each blueprint. And secondly, all right, a lot of the courses now are saying, all right, here's the blueprints, and here are the multiple choice in our book, all right, that maybe relate to that blueprint. Well, you're not going to learn by just doing some multiple choice. And by the way, the multiple choice that we now have in our books, they are the old AICPA content specification released multiple choice. So in many respects, all right, it is what they call not critical thinking, but actually more memorizing. That was the old exam, all right? And people were passing and they were memorizing and they were becoming CPAs and the CPA firms were complaining, hey, we got these people with the CPA designation and they don't know anything. And that's why they created this new exam with the blueprints, with more critical thinking, with more, you know, understanding. They want you to understand the material, all right? Don't go anymore with courses that just say, memorize this, memorize that. All right, just do thousands of multiple choice, no more, all right? You got to understand what you're doing, all right? That's so important. And what still bothers me is you talk to candidates and they never heard of the blueprints. Now, there are some people who would pass whether they look at blueprints or not, but very small group of people, all right? The majority of the people, all right, are just average, above average, but not what I would call geniuses, all right? So you must know the blueprints, all right? If I walk away today and Ron and I walk away today, we hope at least one thing you've gotten out of this besides the information that Ron has generously given you, all right, and done a great job with, all right? You have to know they test on the blueprints. Nothing more, nothing less, all right? Any comment on that, Ron, you want to make?
Phil, I cannot emphasize enough, okay, that you take the blueprints. It's mapped very well to our book and the information contained in each one of our study guides for each part of the exam. And you just methodically go step by step, right? Focusing, of course, on the areas where you're not sure or you don't remember it so well from the days you took the related courses in your undergraduate studies. and focus on those, okay? And please do not walk into the multiple choice trap, right? That you take a practice multiple choice exam, get 90% and say, okay, I'm gonna do this, okay? Because remember, simulations, right? An application of knowledge is so important on the exam. They're looking more and more to that today before they pass candidates on each part of the exam. Application of knowledge, critical thinking, okay? Taking concepts. For example, we discussed earlier risk, right? You find risk, what does it mean? How does it impact your audit scope? How does it impact your audit program? How does it impact your compliance and substantive testing? How does it impact your approach to the audit, okay? No more robots, okay, are allowed in the CPA profession. The robot days are over, as Phil explained.
Oh, no, the artificial intelligence is coming, Ron. So
yes, that's also
Yeah, that's true. But there are, but not the robots who are the students who just say, hey, I memorized 4 million multiple choice questions, all right? And yes, all right? They're very hepped up on, hey, if I'm doing the questions, the multiple choice, and I'm scoring 80, 85, 90, does that mean that I'm going to get 85, 90 on the exam? All right. The answer is no. All right. And the reason is the questions are much harder, but they're not releasing those questions to the CPA providers. They're not releasing the true task-based simulations that they give. All right. They do release some multiple choice to us. They're generally the questions that they tried out and they didn't work out. The students were not getting them right. Or there are examples of two task-based simulations on each subject on the AICPA website, AICPA.org. And just go to AICPA.org. In the search box, put, you want to see the simulations, all right? And it'll take you to two. Now, those are released by the AICPA, but they were probably pre-test problems. That's why they're giving them out, all right? The ones they're going to keep, they're not going to release to us. So please keep that in mind. Anyway, we're not saying this just to push the Jaeger course. We're telling you the cold, hard facts of life, all right? And if you do what we tell you, all right, know the task-based simulations from the aspect of the blueprints, all right, you should have no problem passing this exam. That's really all I can say. I'm not here today to promote Jaeger CPA review. We're here to give information. That's the whole thing. And if it sounds like we're here to give commercials on Jaeger CPA review, I'm sorry if you're taking it that way. That's not the way it's meant. We are here today to inform you on changes. We're giving you information on relative topics that are now changes in the blueprints or clarifications in the blueprints. That's what they do in a lot of cases. They try to clarify the blueprints as the exam keeps going on and on and on. So anyway, Ron, thank you very much for going over this.
And my pleasure, Phil. And we're proud to be, Phil, in the forefront of providing this information to potential candidates. I think that's very important.
And I know the candidates appreciate it. I really do. And I appreciate it. And I thank you. And anyway, that will cover our session here for CPA Review and others. Is that...
Once again, I'd like to thank you for being the best part of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Jaeger. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to hear on the show, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show to share your story, we want to hear from you. Send me an email to the studio at podcast@jaegercpareview.com. If you're enjoying the content that we're providing, we'd greatly appreciate it if you'd submit a review to the Apple iTunes podcast app to let us know how we're doing. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to find out more about the CPA exam and what Jaeger has to offer, check out jaegercpareview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you may have. The link and the phone number will be in the description of this podcast. Here at Team Jaeger, we're excited to tell you about our new Jaeger CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Jaeger CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new month-to-month, no-commitment subscription format. Check it out today. Once again, my name's Rob Medford. I'm your executive producer and director here at the Jaeger Studios. And until next time, take care and be audit you can be.